Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is August 4th, 2004. Today's session number is KAR 2004-02. Today's speaker is Ruth Caff. And the lesson for today is Sense of Vocation Program at Luther College, Church Ministry. Let's listen in.
Once again, I'm Ruth Caff from Luther College, Director of the Vocation Program, and also Professor of German. This is my vocation after teaching German for a long time. I still do that, but I do this as well, and so it's very exciting. Today we're going to talk about church ministry, the second half of the grant. For me, the most important part for a long time, I was and still am, the church vocations coordinator for the college under the grant. I had half of the grant to take care of, outreaches to current pastors particularly, and church leaders who are lay or ordained. What we have here on the board, screen, are the goals of this particular section of the grant. This is $1 million worth over 5 years, the grant which we received from the Lilly Foundation. And so we have $1 million to play with using about 14 different initiatives within the grant. Overall, the grant has 25. We are obviously interested in discernment for people who are not yet in church ministry. That is one section we deal with. Mentoring and guidance, once people have made the decision or are well on their way, bringing them in at regular intervals to talk about that, and that we do with the alumni, the young alumni who are in seminary. We're thinking about it, headed there, and once a year we bring them in and have a conversation with someone from the churchwide office and with us, campus pastor, over a long weekend. So mentoring and guidance as they make that decision, just kind of being there for them to listen and to listen to them. And then the idea that at various stages of life we're still talking about discernment, about refreshing the vocation that we probably have. If you can think of pastors that you know, particularly ordained pastors at this point, but maybe lay leaders as well, you know that there's a high burnout rate. It is very, very stressful work, and it's very lonely work, regardless of what denomination you're talking about. So this grant piece, at least at our college, one of the 72 which received the grant, has a piece to it which says we want to help refresh your vocation if you are working full-time or even part-time for a church organization. And we want to do that by giving you some feedback, of course, a place to come and talk with other pastors or with other lay leaders about what you're doing, but maybe some things that our faculty in their expertise can give you. And one of the things we'll see is poetry. Pastors are not necessarily always trained to read poetry. That's something you do in English class. We have the idea to get two English professors together and have the pastors and the lay leaders read poetry together. And it was wonderful. So we'll see that a little bit. And that's right here. Okay, now I'm going to do better today at this and not hit this twice, I hope. Can I do it? Yes, here it was. We have church leaders retreats and church leader workshops, probably 6 or 7 of them a year. And we send out invitations to a whole database of pastors, as many as we can find. We began with our alumni list. That was a way we could get to them. But we also have learned to advertise in the Synod newsletters through particular pastors that pass the word. This was a real learning process on our part. Again, we've only been at this for 2.5 years now. We have another 2.5 years to go, and we're getting better and better all the time at this. This was a particular workshop which happened twice, once in Rochester, Minnesota, at Assisi Heights about a year ago, and then again in Minneapolis at the Central Lutheran Church. And it was our idea at this point to go off campus to bring these workshops by our faculty to the pastors and the lay leaders out there. This worked very well, this one. We would like to also offer this on the campus because we've discovered in the last 2.5 years many people like to come to the campus. It's beautiful, it's quiet, it's away from their work, and that seems to work well. This was the title they came up with. We also were running this last year a poetry project, actually over the last 2 years, that had nothing to do with the vocation grant, but was a special project by one of the people doing this. And so she combined these, both of these presenters being English professors. And there they are. Husband and wife team, Carol Gilbertson and Mark Mugley, an interesting pair, as I say, both professors of English. Carol was doing a poetry project, and Mark Mugley doing much of the Paideia work, our freshman studies work. He has control over all the English and history that students take as they come into college. Enormously articulate people, and very, very much in love with literature. So they did that one. And one piece that we did on this particular workshop was to ask each of the pastors or lay leaders to bring someone else from another church with them, so that we had an ecumenical group important to these two. That was wonderful. I said that had really never happened to them before, and we were quite excited by it. We kept doing that. These were some comments which the pastors and lay leaders said at the end of their day with Mark and Carol. It was a moment of sanctuary, an intellectual challenge, something that they had not gotten before. And as usual with these workshops, we did give them some books. Here, three poetry books we simply gave to them, beautiful ones. They read some poetry out of all day long, and then were allowed to take home with them, with their own libraries or the church library, whatever they chose to do. It was meditation by the voice of the poet, said one. And I think that was very good. A new kind of meditation for many of the people who were sitting there, and very refreshing. It was a reflection for the soul, she said, and a reminder to fill up the well sometimes, to take time out to do something really different. And so when they took these three books home, they were able to continue reading, perhaps with other people, perhaps with themselves. And the day began really with Mark Mugley, who's quite a very interesting person. He also composes music, and Carol composes texts. And so the two of them did a text, which Carol and Mark had composed. Another wonderful piece with the poetry. Here was one workshop which we ran this spring, a really wonderful one. Two people who had never worked together before. It was Kim Powell, who's in Communication and Women's Studies, and Rachel Faldet, who's in English part-time. Rachel helps many of the students who come in with difficulty in reading and in writing. That is her job. But we put these two together because they had both been working, as I could see, on pregnancy in various ways. And so we titled this The Unexpected Outcomes of Pregnancy, Vocation of a Caregiver. And we invited hospital chaplains and pastors and nurses and doctors and funeral directors, because we had some death tied up with this. And it was a wonderful new way for people to get together and talk about the kind of care that they have to give to mothers and to families as these two things occur. In a second, I'll show you this. Kim and another woman, Kim Wilson, got together and asked over about 5 years a number of people that they knew who had gone through premature birth, babies, tiny babies in neonatal hospitals, to write down the stories of what they had experienced. Many of these babies were already fine, they were older, and they were wonderful stories. And Kim was inspired to do this because she herself had a 1.5 pound baby that was born. And I remember I was the one in chapel that day who got to announce that baby Sina had been born. Baby Sina did survive. She's a wonderful 8-year-old now, great big girl, she's terrific. But the story that Kim wrote about what she and her husband went through, what she and her family went through.
Is that Kimberly Powell?
That's Kim Powell.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay,
yep.
There's a Kim, other Kim.
Yep, that was the other one. That was not somebody from Luther, but okay. Kim Powell does teach at Luther and put this book together. Lots of caregivers in hospitals, chaplains, and so forth, had certainly known what happens with a premature baby. They see it all the time, and they have to take care of people. But they never had really had, I think, this kind of chance to sit down with a premature birth mother and ask her what she was feeling. What would have helped you to do that? And so we spent the day together doing that. It was marvelous. One of the most touching stories in this book is for me anyway, was one called Sarah Stromseth. And Sarah Stromseth is now, I think, 26 years old or so. She was my student, and I had no idea that this had happened to her. So it was quite touching for me. Really, really neat, and her mother did the story. Okay. You have stories of premature births written by parents, and the subtitle 22 Reasons for Hope. So 22 stories in here. The other person, Rachel Foldette, who teaches English at Luther, got together with her good friend Karen Fitton, who used to be one of the secretaries at Luther and now does work in schools, to write stories of miscarriage. Now, these two had nothing to do with each other. They did not know that they were doing these books at all. Neither one of them, but we were able to bring them together. And again, these are stories by parents who have had miscarriages, sometimes a number of them, sometimes just one. Rachel herself has had three, and she has two living children, but very much takes this on as a ministry to write these stories and to ask others to do that well. Karen, I think, has had two, and has also two living children. Absolutely beautiful stories about what happened, what they felt, and certainly taking the whole thing of miscarriage, not stillbirth, but miscarriage, seriously, and grieving over the loss of the child, what helps and what doesn't. So a wonderful thing. And here you can see the patchwork of some of the people. Many of the people who wrote stories here were people from the Luther community or the Decorah community. Many of them were not. They were from all over the place. But some of us reading them were quite surprised that these people had been through miscarriage. We had never known that part about them. And that also helped us to then reach out to them as they reached out to us and allowed their story to be published. Here was a whole nother direction we took this spring. I was particularly thrilled about this one. These are two of my favorite people at Luther College. They are retired faculty members. On the left, Mary Lou Moore, who for many, many years taught English. And on the right, Wilfred Bunny, a terrific man. Love him. He was religion and classics, also did much with Paideia as it was developing. And I asked them, because they both retired for a number of years, please to come back and talk with pastors and lay leaders about what it is to have a vocation once you are retired. That vocation does not stop with work. It really is a calling beyond that. And it doesn't mean that you're slaving away, but it does mean that God does value your life at whatever stage it is. And these two are shining examples of that. So they did. They spent the day with, I think it was 18 couples, wives and husbands, most of them pastors with their spouses, who came to Luther, spent the day talking to each other and finding out, oh, you're having financial difficulty too? Oh, we lived in poverty all our lives as pastors. Yeah, no wonder. Oh, I thought I was the only one. It was great. Oh, just a good feeling about it. But also, what can we do to continue as pastors, as leaders, to support the younger pastors who are coming through and younger lay leaders, but also to have fulfillment to ourselves. A wonderful, wonderful day. No, we're not going to do it here. No, it's not going to go at all. Come on. Right. No wonder I hate technology. I can't get back. I'm sorry. I don't even know what it was at the moment. Anyway, they came out with Jesus as a model for the human. That was their theme. And so whatever stage we were at, we were to take that seriously. Very, very good. Let's see if I can see what it is. It was simply their comments. You know, I thought I was all alone. Well, now I'm going to go back and I'm going to find out how I feel about being a pastor who's retired. I'm not going to stop doing what I've been called to do. I'm going to see this piece of my life as being a new piece to vocation. Okay. Yep, there we go. Whole other piece is run by this campus pastor. She works together with David Vasquez and also Michael Blair. We have three campus pastors at Luther College now. She is a young woman, Deanna Langley, and as you see, she's got her collar on. It's a bit of an old picture. But she runs, in the summertime, Women's Well-Being. It is a church leaders retreat for women, and it is ecumenical. So in this group, we have sisters from Dubuque, some nuns from Dubuque. We have, including two of them, I think that they're 87 and 90, absolute rebels who've been arrested several times for nonviolent protest and continue to do so. But lots of other pastors from all over the country and here, students, we bring those in. Young people, young women who are thinking about seminary or thinking about some kind of direction, bringing them all together. And this goes for 3 days. And the goals are bringing them to voice, that so many young women particularly don't feel that they have a voice. They don't hear their own voice. And something we want to do with all students, but particularly with lay leaders and ordained leaders in the church. And they gain clarity, and they think about making choices, and they stay connected to each other. So the first year we ran this, we had 40 women all together for 3 days. They were so charged up, they decided they had to do it again the next year. And in the meantime, they had a website that they kept connected to each other with. This is going again. This summer, again, with 40 women, absolutely terrific. Very lot of energy in the group. Here were the two presenters, Miriam Therese Winter on the left, a very famous Roman Catholic nun, also quite strong. She came to do the spiritual side of things. And this is Christy Kozingen, who is from the Twin Cities, doing a lot of the more theoretical sort of things. Very dynamic women and a good model for everyone. This is an interesting picture. She is a Roman Catholic. She is in Carlville, Iowa. She is not ordained, though she'd like to be. Very, very interested in priesthood. She is about 55 years old, and she is the sole prison chaplain for Anamosa prison facilities. The other denominations have all withdrawn their chaplains. Here is this woman, this Roman Catholic woman who'd like to be a priest, doing all the chaplaincy and getting quite burned out by it, but came to this workshop and was able to find a great deal of support among the other women. So we have her back again, very good. Here are, oops, those were students, I'm sorry, I'm going to skip by them. Roman Catholic nun from Dubuque, and a music minister, and then several others who are sitting around the table having a discussion, lots of small group discussions. Gentle. Here are the intergenerational speak. This is an older Lutheran pastor, and on the left, a young student, a senior who has just graduated. Oh, thank you. Is that good? Yep. Senior who's just graduated and is going to seminary. So a chance for the younger people to talk with the older people who have a lot of experience in an informal setting, since they stay together really all day. Here's the whole group, a good big group, as you can see. Who's that lady in the second last row there? Beaming away. All right, we go to then the alumni retreat. This is our gathering of young seminarians, people who are interested in seminary, people who have just finished seminary, all of them alumni from Lubbers at this point. I think we will expand that as that goes on. Jonathan Stranyard, a Luther alum, who comes from the churchwide office and does this work for us, came to do, oh my, how lovely, came to do a workshop over 3 days with these people. Again, the connections that can be made for them to talk with each other, to talk with us, to talk with Jonathan, and to do some thinking about it. He had a very clever idea the very first year he did it. It was to take this Books of Narnia, is that right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to impose on it a map of Luther College. And to begin by asking them, what was your journey when you were at Luther College? Where did you go? Where were the dangerous places? And where are the transitions that you're in now? Where are you going to end up? And so it was quite clever, except that he forgot to bring with him a map of Narnia. And so we had to scramble to find one. He remembered the second time. Here are some of the young church leaders of tomorrow, standing with Michael Blair, our third campus pastor, This young woman just headed for New Jersey or New York and working in the churches there, about to be an intern. That is Jim Martin Schramm in the front here with his back toward us. You know Mary Schramm, this is his, her son-in-law, a professor of religion at Luther, very dynamic man. And this is a young woman, a Catholic woman, who's very frustrated, would like to be a priest, has always felt that vocation, and comes to find support in this group. She has now discovered really a kind of side vocation, but a good one. She works with homeless people and mentally ill people to help them through doctor's appointments and so forth. Did this for a year out in the East Coast, and now is back to do that in the Twin Cities. One of my German students. And these two characters. On the left, Kat Shaner, who has just finished work in Chicago in an internship, was ordained about a year ago, and is headed, just, I think, arrived yesterday, Harvard Divinity School for a PhD in theology. A very, very good German student, a brilliant organist, very talented young woman who is going to go far with her work, and I think would like to come back to teach at a church or a college like Luther. So will not be ordained probably in the sense of going into a parish quite so much, but is going to go directly into teaching. And on the right, Laura Walder, who is now an organist, again a German major and a wonderful organist in Kansas. This is where she works. And so these two hadn't seen each other for 3 years and were best friends. So it was wonderful to get them back together and be connected with the rest of the group. Hey, this is at Michael Blair's house, and an interesting group. Again, Maren Wisniewski, who is the Catholic woman, who'd like to be a priest, and a couple of fellows who are going for Lutheran seminary, and then the larger fellow on the left, a surprise to us. He'd been there the year before and had told us that, no, he's Catholic, and he's going to do youth work for the rest of his life. He's very, very sure of that. And then when he came back this year, he said, I'm considering the priesthood now. So he's made some movement by talking to other people in this group. You can see they're having a wonderful discussion. There, another shot of the students. This young man has been in Chicago and is now headed for seminary, doing some more work. And Jonathan with his daughter, who is at Luther College, one of the peer mentors, if you were here the other day, one of the peer mentors who is working for us. I noticed what kind of shirt he's got on. Yeah. Yeah, he's been hanging around Holden Village, I can see. Anyway, wonderful. All right. We are working up this fall to a brand new set of workshops. I have been spending the summer putting those together. And for me, it is work to try to identify faculty or staff who are doing something interesting, who have a great interest. In this particular case, I said, I think that church council members have not been touched upon. That is certainly a vocation, and one that needs some support, a good time to get them together to talk about things. And we have a faculty member who's brand new to us, been there just a year, who is very, very good at talking about stewardship. And then there's another fellow, a husband, not on the faculty, a husband of one of the English professors, who's been doing a lot of asset mapping for congregations. And I said to myself, put them together and see what happens. So this will happen in the fall. These two will get together. Here they are, Robin Larson from management, and Luther Snow, a very bad picture, who's a consultant. I believe that Luther did a great deal for the ELCA in Chicago over a number of years, helping congregations to figure out what their gifts are and move them forward. And, you know, these two, as I say, have never been together before. They didn't know each other. They didn't realize that they were even in decorum. Both of them are fairly new. And so the conversation that happens between them is already a wonderful step forward. That is my idea with these vocation workshops all over, every one of them. All right, we have a whole nother direction, which we began this year. It occurred to us that not every pastor or lay leader would want to come to Luther in a big group and spend time together. Some of them would need quiet time. And so we made it an opportunity for them to do that. They may come for up to a week, cost nothing. We don't pay for transportation, but otherwise we open a lovely room to them. They have access to the library, to the recreational facilities. There are no demands whatsoever put on their time. They simply tell us what they would like to do in that time. It is absolutely free to them. All the meals are paid for, everything's taken care of. And these two have been our first people taking this on. On the left, Linda Schmidt, who's in music ministry just outside of Milwaukee, who has just adopted in the last year two little children from Russia. So her life, although she's working full time, her life is very, very full. Five choirs and two adopted children from Russia, an awful lot going on in her life. She came for 3 days and really felt so refreshed. The family then came after that. And Tom Peets, a very energetic young man who also has two children of his own, but he's working on his dissertation now and wanted to spend some time quiet without the children around him, if that were possible, to finish up the paper and to hand it in. And he was able to do that. These two have just been here, and we're very appreciative. If you know of parish pastors particularly who would be interested in this idea, please let them know. We'd be happy to hear from them. It is not something that people have picked up on terribly much, but the opportunity is there, and we can take up to 10 of them a year. We made that possible. Mm-hmm. All right. This particular piece is one I'm very, very happy with. It was not part of the original grant. We did have church leaders' retreats, of course. But the original grant did not include Luther Lock. Perhaps you've seen some people walking around with these wild pink shirts, like the two there we have on. We have a few people walking around with them. Luther Log has been running for probably 20 years, and it is run by the development and alumni part. All alumni are invited back to spend 4 or 5 days on a college campus right before what we call Nordic Fest, when we have a lot of celebration of the Scandinavian heritage of Decorah and of the college. And during Luther Log, there are, well, like here, a little small courses that people take, or recreation that they can do, and all of it is organized by the alumni office. Well, the first year we got the grant, it was in January to start, and so by June, we were going to have a tough time putting together a church leaders retreat for much. It got in my head that we could do this by piggybacking on Luther Lock, which was already in existence, and so that's what we did. We opened it up and invited church leaders to come, again, without cost, and to do as much of Luther Log as they felt like doing. And that could include doing absolutely nothing if they wanted to. But we invited them back, the facilities are there, the activities are already in place, and it turned out to be such a success with about 15 pastors every summer that we continued it, though it was not a part of the original grant.
Are they all alums?
They can be, but they don't have to be.
History has shown what, that they are mostly alumni?
The Luther Log was actually designated right. for them, but the church leaders we opened up right away to anyone who would like to come. And we've had some who have come. We've tailored it so that they can feel comfortable in the middle of all of this. And there is some nuttiness about it, but it's very, very good. So you know, we open it to any denomination and not necessarily alums. It's really good. So they come. And if they feel like it too, a good thing, they can stay for Nordic Fest. I don't know, some of them have done that, lots of them. This year we had 14 church leaders for a week, and I'll tell you a little bit about what we were doing, but it's a marvelous setup for the college, and a marvelous setup for the pastors and church leaders as well. I agonized as I put this together the first year about whether to put the church leaders in courses and in activities with the rest of the crowd. There are probably 120 people overall who come back with families as a part of this thing. But I decided I was stuck on logistics and I would go ahead and do that rather than have special courses just for church leaders reserved for them. And it turned out to be a wonderful surprise. The church leaders were able, particularly pastors, I think, were able to then talk to normal old parishioners who weren't there at all. And talk about the subject, whatever it was, politics or the books of the Bible that were part of this. It was quite a freeing thing, and so we continued to do that. Here is one. We ran the summer. If you were here the other day, you know a bit about it. On the right, Ann Hyam, who is Vice President for Student Life. And on the left, Mona Nelson, who teaches accounting and is very dynamic in the business department, has had a long career already in business herself. And these two put together a special workshop for the church leaders. It was on what should I do with my life? How do I find life and work? In this particular piece was Laura Uden Nelson here, who teaches Russian studies and has for a long time, is absolutely fluent in Russian, has been to Russia a number of times, usually takes students every other January to go to the, the Moscow Protestant Soup Kitchen, and has them work as a service project there. It's terrific. But anyway, she was doing Vocation of a Dissident here at Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and was thrilled, you can see the gray hair here, that people did know who Solzhenitsyn was, had lived through the Cold War, and could really talk about this in a way that students can't. So this is part of the education of the faculty that I secretly pull off sometimes with this, that they learn how neat you alums are, if you are alums. What it's like to teach older students who are so engaged, who come with so much experience. It's fabulous. And on the other hand, the alums get to know the younger faculty members, particularly who were not part of their lives at Luther, and to see that the college is in very good hands. So she was thrilled, and they were thrilled too. They really had a wonderful 4 days of course. And lots of conversations that happen. This is on the left, Benny, who always comes every year and has for years and years and years. And this is Jeanette Strander, the wife of Jonathan, who is a parish pastor. And these two have known each other over a long period of time, or having a grand time. There's always a t-shirt Benny's wearing last year's, and the lanyards around the neck with the name tags go on. But again, all meals are taken care of and everything else. This year, we went to Spillville, Iowa. Had a wonderful time. We spent 3-4 days in the afternoons every day, particularly for church leaders, and also including some of the rest of them. And had this very nice gentleman, whom these two people know quite well, who is a native of Spillville, and guided us around the town and around the environment. We were trying to show the church leaders another ethnic community with religious background to
it. I don't know anything about that.
Okay, it's a Czech American. We could probably give these two a chance to talk about it. They've been very active in the place. It's a Czech American community, about 13, 14 miles outside of Decorah, and has a great deal of feeling for the heritage. It was actually founded by a German to begin with, and so there was some interest in preserving some of that, but the town very quickly became a home for immigrants from Czechoslovakia, Bohemia, as we called it back then, and there's a wonderful church in the town that is quite decorative, a special cemetery and so forth. But we went all around the area, led by this man and by his brother, my younger brother, doing this whole heritage.
Ruth,
yes.
Can I add, this is where we've been bringing my music friends especially, but other friends, because this is where Dvorak retreated when he was here in the U.S., and the New World Symphony is an outcome of his summer stay in
Spillville. And here he is, standing, talking to some of them. In front of him, he has a number of pastors who come from other areas, and they are listening to all of this. Behind him, I will show you that in just a minute, is a new cross which he had brought from Texas. And this is it. It's a style of cross that was made by someone in Spillville named André, is that right?
Andera.
Andera. I did the German version of it. Anyway, all metal, and all of the inscriptions in Czech here. Very, very stunning. And they're all over the cemetery, very old ones. So there's a lot of interest in that. But they're also all over the German cemetery, the older German cemetery. And that's what my students are going to be doing this fall. I got triggered by this, carried away. And so we're going to do a project together with the people in Spillville and work on the German cemetery. And my students are going to be translating and visiting the cemetery in which all of the headstones are in German. Quite a surprise for them, I think, when they come out of a little Norwegian town. That's it. I'd like to hear from you, if I can find the lights, what you see as strengths of pastors and what you see as needs, particularly, of the pastors you know. It's not very much, right? When you think of the parish pastors you have, or you have now, what are some of the needs, some of the things that colleges and universities could do to help support that person?
I think they need friendships.
Yes.
You know, really, it's, yes. Some congregations works out nicely, you know, they don't get hung up on that, but I mean, it's tough, I think, if you need normal lives that way. So that going away like this, they could meet other people and all that could be nice.
I think you had something about church councils. I don't know what you exactly do with them or not, but there's certainly a need in some congregations for somehow workshops for them, or especially when there's problems in the congregation, conflicts, pastors, and that, how to deal with that, because my experience has the bishop's office haven't really always dealt with it. You have to deal with the local level, so how do you do it?
To show that they really are important, sometimes I think they just have put there to help run the church, but it's a little more another dimension that they ought to appreciate, I think, in their role, which it probably would be a good idea.
And of course, we have to be careful as faculty members to say we are not really in the business of trying to solve problems between pastors and congregations or church councils. So we are very aware of our limits, but we can get a conversation going and perhaps connect them with somebody who could help if there is a difficulty there.
Some sort of course or information on conflict resolution, which in itself is just a study. How do you deal with matters that people don't disagree, but how do you lead, or don't agree, but how do you lead them through the resolution process?
Good idea. Could do a workshop on that particularly. Okay. Mm-hmm. It would be a nice follow-up to this church council one, especially. Because you're right, there are lots of conflicts, regardless of what denomination you're talking about. That's a part of life.
A couple of things. As a parish pastor, and pastors lead youth trips, canoeing, camping, things like that. And I know we always yearn to kind of get together with one another and do those things with one another. So just an outdoor recreation kind of trip. And we'd always talk about it, but it never would get organized. But that kind of thing would just be great if it sort of piggybacked on something else. And then the other thing would be sort of a reversal of, I'll just say cross-cultural. It's an easier, faster way to say it. Just a cross-cultural opportunity. I know you talked about the Czech stuff, but I'm thinking particularly maybe of like the Mexico-U.S. border, things like that, trips like that would be very helpful for pastors. Oftentimes in the congregation, a lot of pastors have those experiences, but not everybody does. And it requires some cash to do that, and if you're offering sort of a paid thing, it'd be a great opportunity. A lot of times there are individuals in the congregation that's their passion, but they just can't get their pastors excited about it in the same way. Okay. So that would be something that I think would be necessary.
Perhaps a trip like that, bring your pastor. You come and you bring your pastor.
I think that'd be cool.
It's a lot of cash, but it would be a very good idea to do.
Right, you can do that. You can do that. You could go to Chicago and do that in certain neighborhoods.
The year before, too, then we did Spillville, we did Postville, which is another
I was thinking of Postville.
You could experience more than just the Span part of it.
Yeah, it's a tiny town if you haven't heard of it. It's probably 20 miles from Decorah. And in it are some Russian Jewish people and Mexicans.
originally settled by Germans, and I believe there are...
Bosnians?
Bosnians, yes.
There's 23 different cultures now, in 2000.
Yeah, incredible. And the radio station they founded now is running, I think, 23 languages.
Wow.
It's a big little town. It's a wonderful experience, and so we're kind of starting what you're talking about, but not going at such a great distance, and I think that's a great idea. Thank you for that.
You know, we come from a very rural area where what the church can provide from a program standpoint, if you want to call it that, is really limited. Mm-hmm. You know, the other night we got here and we had the choir, and we had an immediate, I don't know, 30 people with good voices that could launch into these songs and perform in an hour. And, you know, our church, I think it struggles from, you know, spiritual leadership from the standpoint of the pastor having maybe enough resources to give. He gives good sermons, but, you know, just the surroundings and the environment for him to be able to give, you know, compelling sermons. And the music program is almost nothing in our church, you know, it's just for lack of numbers. And, you know, we have in our area then, there's kind of a flight out of these smaller churches, especially with the young people, because they're looking for more contemporary service. And I don't know how to solve that, but I think, boy, you hate to be losing people from the church because it's not providing them with what they will help them grow spiritually. And so, you know, there's any number of talents that a pastor needs to have, and I think you make the laundry list about what they need, and then...
It's a wonder anybody takes a job. Yeah. This is enormous.
Yeah.
One of the things I had thought about doing, and I am going to go ahead with it, is rural youth ministry, where you are not dealing with someone who is a professional youth minister, mm-hmm. but somebody out of the congregation who has this passion for doing it, and getting those people together in the area. So I think from your church, and just inspire.
Well, it gives them ideas. Yeah. You know, somewhere they go for a pool of ideas. Resource.
You know, you're talking about planning trips. When you don't have a large congregation where you maybe have a paid youth minister, then some of those things just don't get done unless you've got somebody in the congregation that has enough gumption or the training or the background to say, hey, I'll plan this trip to this place, which will give the kids or other people in the congregation a great experience.
And then connecting them with others who are doing this as well. We do have a young woman on our staff at Luther. She is in the financial aid office, and she is doing this in a rural parish, but all alone. I admire what she's done, and I think we need to connect her with others. And of course with professional youth ministers as well, who can help them to have the pool of ideas.
Yeah, I think there's some places in some other Lilly grants where a lot of the research has shown that and part of the health and wellness initiative of the ELCA Board of Pensions, where along with Mayo, has shown the need for spiritual renewal. And I know of another Lilly Grant center in Albuquerque where they are developing a series of retreats that include time for silence and silent retreat, as well as then spiritual practices that renew and assisting clergy in kind of coming back to renewing their own spiritual life, because they do a lot of renewing, you know, of helping others in that, absolutely. But are not good at their own.
Yeah. So developing the skills to be able to continue that once we've done that. Yeah, I think that's very important. And we have done that a bit with Bradley Hansen, if that's a name anybody knows, who was on the Luther faculty and retired. He developed into a spiritual director, and we made it available to these people who could come, but I think that's much more structured and it's really limited. It also reminds me to tell you that the Fund for Theological Education, which is the administrator of all of these grants for the Lilly Endowment, has pushed for all of us, and really demanded all of us, I'm glad they have, to share information from one school to the other. There's a series of meetings in which we do this each year, and also their website. So they really, really encourage sharing. Not that the Luther College has this great idea and they won't tell anybody else, but if St. Olaf or somewhere else has one, we'd like us to try out.
When you're setting this up, was I know you've talked about so many things, I'm sure, in setting this up. Was there any thought given to developing, I'll put it under the term leadership, but leadership of four young people, in a sense of not how to run meetings or how to organize people, but giving them confidence that they can do a lot of different things. And you know, it seems strange to say that person who's in a pom-pom squad or a cheerleader or a football quarterback, they say, well, that's a leader, but they really may not be. You see, and it's hard for me to put it into words, but I've seen that, and there's not many avenues to develop leadership in that sense. You don't get it by pushing hamburgers at McDonald's like a lot of young people do, and so forth. And I don't know if you talked about that or if it's something that would come under that
venue. I am going to talk about it more on Friday. Oh, okay. In fact, we have a young woman here at the Holden Village who is doing a program, something like that, for our grant. But Iowa also has a WILD. I never get it. It's the Holy Iowa. Anyway, it's got to do with leadership in churches. And it's a workshop that we run through this.
Well, I'm sure that's real good.
I think you can always do more. Yeah.
How about continuing education, foreign language study for leaders in the church?
Okay. So she's pushing my buttons.
Yeah, I know.
A German professor.
But not take a look, have pastors in areas, look at their demographics, the changing demographics, ask what is the need for a language here, and then use finances to bring someone in to teach for continuing education.
I love it. We'll do it.
That's a good idea.
That's a wonderful idea. So particularly Spanish, probably?
Potentially, but
there's lots of minorities, a lot of communities that are unique to each community. Yeah. I think that's a good idea.
That might be the most accessible one to start with. And that way, I mean, the faculty maybe at Luther could play
Oh, I love it. Ruth, one thing that comes to my mind is as you collect these, you mentioned the 14 Luther log and the first couple, it seems that a book should come out of that from their concerns, if you will, as they come together, the issues that might collectively then help us frame better education down the road for development and or even to be shared amongst themselves. I think that whole sharing piece, you're in a lonely position. But the thing that comes to my mind that in addition is just after these few rather unstructured days, it takes a few days to figure out, you know, what am I about here in retreat or what, you know, I think it's wonderful to have unstructured, but it almost might be better for these people to know that it's a two-part experience. One part being a time when you determine what your goal or vision might be, and the second part where you actually have a chance to pursue it. Because I think sometimes you just need the quiet, introverted time or internalization time to really help yourself decide, oh, I need to know more computer skills so I can, whether it be that. I mean, someone touched on, I think even as you brought up even council membership, one of the things that comes up in our church is the efficiency of handling the council meeting is dependent on some leadership skills that maybe need honing or coaching or and that's if there was a way to frame that for the pastor to give leadership to the person that's stepping into that role or something of that sort.
So rather than ask pastors or lay leaders who are coming to the campus for a retreat to spend time during their already busy schedules figuring out what they want to do when they get there, do it as part of that. I like that.
And then come again and do it.
Yeah.
And know that the second time they come, they...
Two visits.
Oh, it's a two-part, So the first visit is to determine what is it that you're in, and for refreshment. And the second part will be refreshment with a goal fulfilled. I don't know.
Good. Okay. Oh, you're full of good ideas. I like those.
Have you done anything with art?
The poetry, so far,
not
visual art.
Visual art.
not for pastors and lay leaders. What have you thought about?
I'm thinking of sanctuary space, thinking through the church year, drawing out artists in the congregation, and thinking through the church year with them, and what, how do you,
So not limited to banners and that kind of thing.
No, whatever just comes out of that.
Yeah. And it's even a conversation about it, if nothing else.
Yeah, that's really good.
You know, just to expand on her point, you know, sometimes there's, and our pastors have done, you know, you might have an artist portrayal of something, maybe a religious scene, but and have that in, as they're going through, just pointing out what the artist sees and so forth, and but making it really into a, you know, a sermon, and you're talking about the tensions maybe involved and so forth. I'm not going to give any specific examples, but there are things that you can do. There is a lot of religious art, obviously, through history, and I think it'd be legitimate for pastors to be able to demonstrate to the congregation how others see things, and but most people can't explain a piece of art. I wouldn't be able to, obviously. I'm not qualified either, but it is kind of fun when you've heard seen somebody do that. It is kind of interesting. It's a nice, and maybe pastors would like something like that, you know.
Sort of an art history.
Yeah, sure. I don't know if art would be the best, but you wouldn't want to, you could just choose a few select items, you know, and say, here's an artist has interpreted something. Would you be interested in, you know, you give a print of it or something, a big enough one? I don't know. It's just a thought. But when she mentioned that, I thought that was.
I think another thing, along that line, though, is that I think, again, I think what a lot of clergy need and other rostered leaders need is sometimes the opportunity to come to do something that has no purpose beyond that event other than their own renewal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're already, if there's burnout, if there's a sense of depletion, it's the purpose need not be anything more than filling the well as one of the, because then out of that renewal comes new creativity. But if you're there, it's like, oh, I got it. This is going to be turned into a sermon or the next creative thing. Then it's just a more of a sense of pressure, and that's that I have to prove to my counsel who gave me this time away that I'm going to come back with the product, and it adds to.
That's
that.
What the poetry did. Yeah. I think that was so surprising.
I agree with you. I think that's a good point.
And they, I think many of them, though they had read the title, do not expect to come in and read poetry all day long or have poetry read to them. And then they said later, well, why not? Look who was teaching it. I should have known better. But it really was refreshing. I think that's exactly the kind of thing we're talking about. So I'm going to think about what visual arts might do, or even music, that we can work on that isn't purpose-driven in that way. That's an important one to do. Oh, you've helped me so much already.
I think, though, the leadership that, you know, that your program is already modeling is strong in that it reminds us as a congregation that wellness has to be a priority for them. And we have experienced, I have experienced one of our most talented, watching him burn out, his family burn out. The good news is he's back at it. He left it for education for about 10 years, and now he's back at it. I know he's just a wonderful gift to us. But through his burnout, if you will, our council started to recognize that it's essential and important that they take a Sunday a month away, or that they have, you know, time for refreshment. Sabbatical every, you know, I don't know the criteria, but church and congregations need to address that.
The guidelines from the ELCA.
And I think it's important for the personnel.
Sabbatical after 3 years or a full sabbatical after 6 years.
Yeah. I know our pastor's coming next week here to hold, and then, you know, I think she does that this in the summer and goes somewhere in the winter for a week. She's cognizant that she has to do that, and we really, really do support her. And obviously what you're presenting is, you know, reminding us again that that's really important.
I'm going to put together a workshop this spring. Actually, I spent a lot of the summer doing it with one nursing instructor who was very interested in spirituality, and one of the coaches for the wellness center at Luther, or the exercise equipment, again geared for church leaders, come in and see how important it is to exercise regularly and have good nutrition and so forth. Let's give them a boost in that direction. And, not to do it in a threatening way, so we decided we're not taking them to the exercise room and making them sit up here and do anything, but just to kind of talk about it.
Well, but it's, you know, if you feel fit, you have more energy, and it affects the mind as well as it does the body.
Are you going to introduce them to tofu?
Yeah.
On the exercise thing, though, there are variations of what people want and need.
Well,
so one year it could include, you know, this work, you know, will include daily exercise regimen and learning how to use exercise equipment.
Yeah. Well, and their levels of what they can do here, too, what they're physically able to do.
Well, anyway, absolutely exciting work, and part of the best part for me is getting to work with pastors and people I would not normally encounter otherwise, and with the faculty. I'm bringing those two groups together. It's been so much fun. Really fun. Great education. Well, we'll continue tomorrow looking at some more stuff. Thank you so much for your good ideas and your attention.
Thank you.
Thank you.